Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the November 2nd edition of Commodity Week. Arbitrage. It's all about arbitrage today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Tom Slate, the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the opening to the closing market report and everything in between.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Matt Bennett, Sandy reminded us this week, as it relates to how gasoline moves in the United States, that cash grain and cash gasoline is all about having the asset in the right place at the right time at the right price. If it's not, then arbitrage can take place. Usually, Central Illinois, of course, handles arbitrage for corn, the river to the export market, shuttle trains to Texas and the Southeast. But that's not the case this season. How has it changed your view, Matt, of the Central Illinois farmers' corn marketing plan?
Well, I've been talking about this for a couple, 3 weeks at least. And, you know, there's a lot of, people in our shoes, for instance, with TGM, that we've had to buy a little bit of corn to come in that fulfill some of our commitments, either through, you know, feed mill or a food grade processor that we might be working with. And I think the thing that we all need to keep in mind is that whenever some of us have to start going out of our normal boundaries to source corn, whoever was originally sourcing that corn, they've got to figure out where they're going to source the corn. And so obviously it's going to create really interesting basis levels as we move forward. And I think one of the biggest things to be gleaned from this is, what is high quality corn going to be worth at some point here in the next few months? And I think that the basis levels could be extraordinary.
Chip Nellinger?
Yeah, I agree. Typically, you know, we're kind of the leader and can fill the pipeline here. We're seeing corn being railed in from the Northwest out into Minnesota and the Dakotas into Central Illinois. I think what it's done from a farmer perspective is maybe slowed the basis down. You know, by now, typically, we'd see that basis start to come back and get strong. Still historically good, but I think it's holding the markets back a little bit. And it's going to be temporary, like Matt said. You know, eventually, where this corn's coming from right now, they have a surplus at harvest. But it's not like they don't have their own demand to deal with down the road. So I think it's temporary. I think it's probably going to make for some maybe counter-seasonal type basis moves. But I still think down the road you're going to see that basis come back, but it's probably holding it back a little bit as far as Central Illinois goes.
Yeah, and Dan Zwicker.
Well, yeah, I mean, Central Illinois, to my understanding, basically has to jump over Iowa and pull corn in from the Dakotas. I got a brother that's a merchandiser for an ethanol plant in North Dakota, and he's watching all of his corn inventory move down to Central Illinois. So it is going to put a lot of pressure on a lot of these smaller ethanol plants because your larger ones have a lot of horsepower to pull it into their plants. So, yeah, you're going to see some interesting basis levels. It's going to take a while yet, though. I think that might, it may not happen until you get into the first of the year or so. But it could begin to start December 1st because I think what's going to happen is export demand is going to start kicking in gear on the corn side. It's been absolutely miserable here for the last several weeks. But export demand is going to start kicking in, I think, around the first part of December. So you're going to see the river basis levels begin to perk up after the first of the year. So there's going to be a lot of competition for a good cash corn inventory, I think, after the first of the year.
Matt, you talked just a bit about good corn, but I'm wondering how much corn, good or bad, is left in the farmers' hands, actual farmers' hands, whether it be stored in your elevator or stored in the bin.
Well, it was really interesting to see the way this kind of played out this year because early, you know, in the August harvest period, I guess, guys were selling everything across the scale that wasn't contracted already. I mean, I'm talking 97-98% of what we got was sold right across the scale that wasn't already contracted. And so, you know, looking forward, I guess, I don't know, to me it's going to be really interesting to see how this is all going to play out. But I don't know, from a pricing standpoint, I would say farmers are sitting on a very small percentage historically compared to what they usually are, especially in our particular situation. I think that the price levels were so high, and you got to remember, guys just didn't want to store anything if they were worried at all about aflatoxin. And so if they're hauling everything into the elevator, I think there's a little higher percentage of a chance that they're going to be selling stuff across the scale and not really storing a whole lot.
Okay, I have a second question, Chip, on this same topic. Most of our analysts would have been telling producers to protect their crop insurance in June and July. And then, of course, now we have the payoff number, which is $7.50 per corn, and they're going to get that minus the, you know, the February number times the number of bushels they're short, plus whatever it is that you folks did with them for their crop insurance. Why not just sit back and enjoy a good portion of that?
That's a great question, and I wouldn't have an argument for that. Great levels here. In a lot of cases, even though yields were way down, you know, farmers through crop insurance and the bushels that they have unpriced have a profitable situation. So no doubt about it. I'm a technician. I'm getting a little bit nervous on the way this corn market's acting, and beans especially. And that is a great question. The next targets to the downside, if these funds decide they want to pull the plug and pick a different market and say, thank you, I've had a nice run in the grains, 640, first the gap at 680 D's in March futures, possibly 640. It's a tough call. I think you've got great basis opportunities out here in the winter and spring and summer, but that doesn't mean leave a bunch of unpriced inventory sitting in your bin or sitting at the elevator. So I think that's a great point.
December corn, by the way, this week had a top at $7.63 1/4. Its bottom at $7.32 1/2. Settlement price at $7.39 1/2, up a penny and 3/4. December of next year at $6.36 1/2, up 1 1/4 cents. That's what, about 60 cents better than last year at this time. And I saw a tweet from you. I follow you on Twitter, by the way, Matt Bennett, earlier in the week that said, look, if you're looking out at next year, there's a lot of profit yet to be had in this marketplace.
Yeah, whenever you can look at input prices where they are this year as compared to last year, fertilizer prices are relatively stable. Yet you've got corn prices, you know, like you said, 60 cents better anyway. And so I think whenever you've got input prices stable and your output is even better, then a guy needs to probably look pretty hard at least pricing, you know, percentages. There's always the opportunity to come back in here and kind of tweak your position. But if you hedge at 640 basis the D's for next year at these input levels, you're locking in one heck of a profit level.
Okay, so we've taken up both the old and the new crop just a bit. Let's go to a different technician. Dan, can we hear what you think of both of those and where you technically think they are, old and new crop corn?
Well, new crop, I don't see anything terrible in the chart. It would have been nicer not to have that Friday break if you were on a on the bullish side. I think the Friday break is probably somewhat worrisome. But I think what we're seeing, too, is today you saw a screaming dollar sharply higher, and I think that kind of came in and kind of rushed down all the commodities. I'm not too sure exactly where gold settled. I know at one time it was down like $40.
It settled $40 lower.
And I think what we're seeing here is there could be some kind of flight to safety about ready to kind of take hold in here, depending upon, you know, how the election goes next Tuesday and then how the politicians deal with the fiscal cliff. And then we've got... we no longer get through January 1st, and we got the debt ceiling that has to be raised or something about mid-February. And, you know, I think the market's already looking ahead and saying that probably we're going to have, you know, a divided government again, and there's just going to be some pretty good turbulent times. So I still think there's some risk in that. I think that was a big contributor today going into the weekend election. But if the funds do decide to exit and they just want to kind of put their money, you know, in a 0% savings account someplace, they can do that. But that just tells you that basis levels could get quite wild here over the winter months, because we do have a rationing job to do. Now, we are doing it slowly in time. And then, of course, if the supplies are going to get a little bigger, if F.C. Stone's number is correct with a couple more bushels per acre, that just makes the job of rationing a little easier. But we're not really going to know, I don't think, what size of crop we have until we see the January crop report anyway, because that's when they're going to tweak the acres, and then they'll be able to take a look at December 1 stocks and then work everything out of that. Work backwards out of it to kind of come up with a production number. So I think there's a lot of changes yet to come on supply. Like I said, by January we'll maybe have a little better idea what the political atmosphere is in Washington.
And before January, of course, we have a couple of reports that are due, one next week on Friday, and we'll take that up during the closing market report in our daily programming. Let's move on to wheat. December contract, $8.77.5 was the high this week, the low at 8.52¾. It was up just 3/4 in the December at 8.64¼, but July at 8.75 gained 10¼ cents. Ukraine has changed its mind about banning exports, and U.S. wheat is off to one of the very poorest starts ever. What do you think of that marketplace, and can it lead in this era?
Well, I think it has been leading. If you look at that KC wheat market, the new crop, into new highs this week. So Chicago is a follower right now, and it's all the issues you said. Whether Ukraine officially bans their exports or didn't, the truth is there's probably very little left to come out of Ukraine and that Black Sea area. So we've started to become more competitive. We've got the problems in the plains. And absolutely, wheat all week long, and especially on Friday, was kind of the bullish stalwart. I mean, it closed lower but it is leading the way right now.
I think if you were looking for something to do as far as trading goes, I've got guys always wanting to get a little out of their realm, you know, just spreading the KC and Chicago wheat might be a real play, because to me, obviously out west, there's a lot bigger issues. And then you get into the soft red country and it looks as though our plantings are going to be fairly good and that, you know, we're actually going to have decent chances, some decent supply of soft red. So I think that's something to be watched as well.
Just a couple of minutes left in the first half of the program. Soy complex, November beans, 15.70¼ on the high, the low at 15.24. Settlement price there was off 34¼, down 34¼ at $15.27. November of next year at $13.36½, we're down 3¼. Is South America off to that good a start, Dan, that there should be this much pressure on the marketplace?
I think a lot of the pressure came today on the private estimate showing a larger bean estimate, and even though the trade's been talking about it, once they see something like that, You know, that just generates long liquidation. But, yeah, I have to admit that probably, you know, a 30-some cent loss today. When I walked in this morning, I did not expect to see a 30-cent loss in soybeans. So, but South America's got problems. They're not perfect by no means, but there's still a lot of potential there. But we still have the world supply of soybeans, and we're going to maintain that up through the winter months. China was a big buyer this past week. I think you're going to see some pretty hefty export sales next week. We had a good number here today. So the underlying demand structure on soybeans is still good. But I think there's some other, you know, considerations that kind of hammer down the bean market. And the key here will be whether or not we see some follow through. But, you know, the way I look at the soybean market, I think this is the making of a right shoulder of a head and shoulder bottom formation that could tee us up for a pretty good rally. And, you know, what happens if USDA comes in and says the crop ain't bigger? So we don't know, you know, what USDA...
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. We'll be back in just a couple minutes when we'll talk with Tom Slade of the U.S. Grains Council.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. October was cooler and wetter than normal. The statewide average temperature was 52.2 degrees, 1.9 degrees below normal. Most of the state reached lows in the 32-degree range, and much of central and northern Illinois got down to 28 degrees or colder, signaling the end of the growing season for most outdoor plants. The statewide average precipitation was 3.9 inches, that's 0.7 inches below normal. The wettest area of the state was between Quincy and Champaign, where precipitation totals range from 4 to 7 inches. Some of the driest areas were in southern Illinois, south of I-64, and in northern Illinois, north of I-80. Some of those areas had precipitation totals of less than 3 inches. The statewide average precipitation for January through October was 27.1 inches. That's nearly 5.8 inches below normal. This made it the 15th driest January through October and virtually tied with 2005. The statewide average temperature for January through October was 58.9 degrees. That's 3.4 degrees below normal and the second warmest on record. The statewide average temperature for January through October was 58.9 degrees. 3.4 degrees above normal and the second warmest on record. The forecast for this weekend and early next week includes highs in the 40s and 50s and lows in the 30s throughout Illinois. There is a slight chance of rain on Saturday, but nothing significant after that. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
This is the November 2 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Matt Bennett, Chip Nellinger, and Dan Zwicker are with us as our panelists. Tom Slate on the phone line from Washington, D.C. is the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Tom, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Why don't you tell us first about the mission of the council?
Well, Todd, thank you, and thank you for letting me share some time with your listeners. The mission of the U.S. Grains Council is pretty simple. I mean, our tagline is developing markets, enabling trade, and improving lives. But in reality, what we do is that we're the marketing arm, international marketing arm, for Illinois' corn farmers all around the world, working 24/7. And this year, you get a bonus. It's 366. But Our duty is to go out there and develop, expand markets for U.S. corn all around the world, identify trade barriers for corn exports, wherever they may be, tackle those trade barriers, and look at some of the capacity building issues that we need to address in order to enhance demand for those products. And a lot of what we do is simply service customers, reaching out to them, understanding what their needs are, and making sure that they look to the United States to meet those needs.
You know, oftentimes when we talk about agricultural policies, in this case maybe the Farm Bill, which was not extended, we don't really understand or fully understand the impact that might have. But you kind of are in the direct target line for this Farm Bill, which was not extended by Congress and really hasn't been put on the slate yet to take up even in the lame duck session.
No, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, we keep talking to folks about another log you can throw onto the fire for what happened when the Farm Bill lapsed was that the two programs that the U.S. Grains Council depends upon very clearly, the Foreign Market Development Program, or FMD, and the Market Access Program, or MAP, the authority for those programs are within the Farm Bill. The FMD program, the Foreign Market Development Program, that actually ended on September 30th. The Market Access Program, that program will end at the end of its funding year, which is December 31st, 2012. So, you know, the council depends on both of those programs to leverage the investments made by the Illinois Corn Checkoff, as well as agribusiness companies that are members of the council. That money is leveraged through U.S. DA through the Foreign Agricultural Service and these two programs to create, a very expansive, nearly $30 million program to market and expand markets for U.S. corn producers.
You're being awfully humble, but I believe that if the extension doesn't happen soon, you just run out of money. Is that right? And you can't operate.
All right, you call me.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. You know, we're at a stage right now where, you know, we've had to shut down a lot of our activities, our normal marketing activities, just to keep the people and the offices, those folks that work for you 24/7, 366, serving, you know, U.S. farmers. We've shut down a lot of our programs. Our priority being keeping those offices open, keeping those staff open. We're kind of on perilous ground right now. If the Farm Bill doesn't get acted upon, by the end of January, we're going to face some awfully hard decisions that'll affect our ability to stay competitive in this highly competitive market for corn.
Yeah, Tom, speaking of what you do for, I guess, U.S. corn farmers, I'd like to know a little bit about the survey of the Chinese corn crop and gathering that information and maybe how much easier it has gotten to get that information in the past few years, and just tell us about their crop this year.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. This was, I believe, the 16th year we've done this in a row, and it's interesting because, yes, our ability to gather, good statistics on what's going on in China improves each year, but it's still kind of mercurial, particularly on planted acres. What we've been able to do is get great access and cooperations from our friends in China to get a good fix on what the crop looks like. And the crop this year in China was good. They're having a good harvest, another record harvest. We're seeing it, basically an increase of about 3%. Both in terms of yield improvement and in terms of overall production, which translates to about 5 to 6 million metric tons of additional corn coming on to the Chinese market. That's great. That's really good news for China. And the part of the thing that we were very concerned about, I think maybe you may have noticed this, but there are a couple of typhoons that blasted through China right before the crop was totally mature, and people were trying to get a grasp on how that was going to affect the final production figure. Of course, but in China, a lot of that corn is harvested by hand, so a lot of people felt that was not going to hurt, overall production that much. But again, the China crop looks good. That's good news for them. It's certainly good news for us in a kind of a curious way, in that we need to have that that market, that demand, that overheated demand for meat products, particularly in China, that's expanding really rapidly with the advent of urbanization and a growing middle class in China. That demand continues to be met by grain, and so the domestic crop will come in handy. I think the Chinese are still looking to import corn from the United States. They're waiting for some of these marketing signals to be more to their liking, and I think they probably will start to see those signals now that the basis in South America seems to be firming a little bit. I think we'll have a better window for exports, and I think China will be back in the market. So we continue to engage with China to get a fix on what's going on with their production. Good year, but still they've got a long way to go in terms of the type of production we see here in the United States.
Tom, I have a kind of a two-staged question here. First, as you look out 1 year, 2 year, 5 years down the road here, how much expansion can we see for our corn here domestically to move into China? And then, I guess as a corollary, where else do you see some bright spots across the world developing that we could maybe increase our exports?
Well, that's a great question. I think in China, I think there is a lot depends on what's happening now with the Party Congress. And, you know, it's worth bearing watching. I know, the Communist Party Congress is probably not something that many of your listeners are going to spend a lot of time reading or listening about. But what's happening in China is that they're going to be graduating from kind of an export-based, produce all these, widgets and things that we buy every day in the store, export-based economy to a more consumption-based economy, meaning that, domestic consumption and quality of life and living standards in China are going to become more of a focus for governmental interest, which is going to open up a broad variety of market opportunities for U.S. agriculture and particularly for U.S. corn. We see, imports to China continuing to improve, probably, conservatively, maybe about 2 million metric tons a year improvement, year to year. This is a kind of an interesting year. I think if we had the kind of crop that we were looking at in the early part of the spring, I think China would have been coming into this market and coming into this market strong. China's good crop plus, where we are on price levels, they're kind of spectators right now, but I think they'll be back. Moving beyond China, I think there's, there are some really good signs of some strong markets that we're watching very, very closely. One in particular being the whole Middle East and North Africa. And again, a lot of people might raise an eyebrow at this, but this whole Arab Spring movement that's been going throughout North Africa and throughout the Middle East and Egypt is starting to stabilize a little bit, and I think there's some pragmatism starting to develop within those countries, recognizing that, now we're back on more even ground politically. Let's start rebuilding our businesses. Let's start rebuilding our agricultural production. There was a poultry integrator in Tunisia that we were talking to recently. We talked about doubling broiler production, having layer production increased by 30%, increasing turkey production by 50%. These are pretty startling numbers. So we're looking very, very clearly at what's happening in an area part of the world that's been more questions than answers, but we are hoping things settle down there a little bit. And then I would also look to South America, places like Venezuela, Ecuador, Peru, and, of course, our good friends in Mexico. We're looking for some strong market growth there.
Tom, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Tom Slade is the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. A very short word from our panelists, starting with you, Dan Zwicker.
Just play it safe up there, and I'm headed up north during the first week of December, so check with your CGB elevator and see when I'm going to be scheduled to speak.
We'll keep track of you, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty volatile market moving forward, and I would just be happy with what you've got.
And Chip Nellinger.
Keep a close eye on the 13. It's not too early to be pushing a pencil. Good profit levels out there. Volatility coming.